Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. I'm a psychologist at the University of Bristol, and my research aims to explore the associations between substance use and mental health. In this series of podcasts, I discuss a different recreational drug each episode. It has no judgment, no hyperbole, and no spin. Just information about what we know about these substances, the harms, but also potential medical benefits, as well as myth-busting some of the misinformation out there. So here's the first discussion, and I'm chatting to Scroobius Pip about the most commonly used illegal drug out there, cannabis.
Say Why to Drugs with Dr. Susie Gage.
And we're rolling, so yeah.
On this episode, I thought that we would talk about cannabis.
Fantastic. That's a very popular one to discuss, a hot topic.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's the bud or the resin of the cannabis plant, and it's most commonly used by smoking. Some people eat it. You can potentially vape it, or you can smoke it with or without tobacco. And I was going to ask you what you think the appeal is. Why do you think people use cannabis?
I'd say cannabis of all the drugs, it gets the best press. It's rappers like it, people in rock bands like it. It's one of them that's so popular. And again, there is that diversity now, particularly with a vaping. And I in my teens, I used to smoke weed. I've not smoked for something like 15 or 16 years now. But again, the off-putting parts at the time was that you generally mixed it with tobacco, and tobacco was the one that you saw as the more dangerous of the two, I guess, as a stoner or whatever else. Whereas now with vaping, and particularly in America where the laws have changed and you can buy all these edibles and vape packs and things like that, it seems like the one that, I don't know, it's becoming the most acceptable of the drugs. And it blew me away that America was the first to kind of go, this is kind of all right, you know?
Yeah, it's very interesting how different it is treated in different countries.
Yeah.
And that's perhaps something to talk about maybe in a future episode, because I think for this one, probably stick to the effects of cannabis
course.
And that kind of thing. But it's definitely something that I find very interesting as well. So in terms of what does cannabis do, sort of there's shorter term intoxication effects that we can think about, and then longer term potential effects on your physical or mental health. So if we think 100%. About intoxication effects, if you smoke cannabis, you tend to get the peak effect up to about 30 minutes after you smoke it, and it can last for up to several hours.
Yeah.
And if you eat it, it takes longer to feel an effect, but these effects can last for several hours.
Is there a difference in the effect in the way that you ingest it, if you know what I mean, on the actual physical effect of the drug, or is it just the time it takes to hit you? Or
That's quite a good question, actually. I think there's a difference effect because of the time it takes to hit you. So if a substance has an effect really immediately, this can create this kind of conditioning response. So sort of like Pavlovian response almost.
Yeah.
You start to associate the feelings with the substance more immediately because you get the hit more immediately.
Of course.
And that's how sort of addictions can develop from that kind of immediate pairing of these associations, and then also withdrawal effects as well as another thing that adds to addiction.
Yeah.
So if you smoke a substance, it gets into your bloodstream really quickly because it gets into your lungs straight away.
Yeah, of course.
Whereas if you eat something, you have to digest it, it goes through your stomach, so it takes a lot longer to get into the bloodstream and then into the brain, so you don't get that bang,
that
hit.
Immediacy of I've taken this and here it is. It's more a slow burn or a slow build, I guess, which I guess is something that needs caution in a way, but because of that thing of you feeling it's not kicked in,
absolutely,
it's not done anything. Whereas it's a really easy example is I remember reading about when you're full from just eating, mm-hmm, that your stomach takes half an hour to let your brain know that you're full. And that's why at Christmas, after Christmas dinner, about half hour after, you all go, oh my God, I've eaten far too much, but my brain didn't tell me that. So I guess it's a similar thing, because mm-hmm, if you're eating something, it will take its time to get there. And there's often, there may be that thing of, I don't know if this has had any effect. Oh, I'll take another one, or I'll try another half, or whatever else.
And absolutely. It's
that's
so
the
much
risk there.
Easier.
Whereas
to
a joint,
it
is quite straight away, yep, you know, or
no
more immediately.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, exactly that. You know when you're at your limit a bit quicker.
Yeah. So the effects that that cannabis can have, the sort of high effect.
Yeah.
People report feeling quite mellow, potentially feeling sleepy. Some people get kind of a bit paranoid.
Yeah.
You might have sort of short-term memory problems. You might feel a bit anxious, but you also might feel really giggly, like you're having a great time. Some people report getting mild hallucinations, but this is a lot less common.
It's a weird one. I've heard more, and again, I don't know any facts on this. This is purely anecdotal, but I've heard more people speak of hallucinogenic effect or hallucinogenic potency when eating compared to when smoking. And again, I don't know if that's something in the way your body would take it in, but yeah, it's a weird one, because again, I never remember from when I used to smoke and when I used to eat as well, in fact, I never remember any particular hallucinogenic experience. I think if I ever spoke of any, it was purely because I thought it sounded cool and I wanted people to, do you know what I mean? I'd exaggerate any effect to be, yeah, man, I was so high, I could see this and see this. No, I just got a bit giggly and a bit happy and a bit relaxed.
But that's another really important thing about how addictions can take hold or becoming sort of dependent on a substance, because quite often the first time you use a substance, it's not actually that great.
Yeah.
And you might be in a group of people who sort of want to do it, and you think, well, I should join in with them, and after a while you're doing it and you've sort of learned to enjoy the feeling of it. Whereas actually, if you'd just done it the first time from a purely sort of scientific perspective of what do I feel about this, am I enjoying this experience, you might not necessarily.
And one of the greatest examples of that, and it's a subject that we'll be discussing in another episode, but alcohol is a great example of that. I don't know anyone who enjoyed alcohol the first time they tasted it.
You generally go and cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you generally go, oh, this is unpleasant. Even if you get drunk, it's an unpleasant feeling because it's new to you. So, yeah, drugs are weird in that way. And I guess again, it's the social pressures of this being a good thing or a bad thing that make you go, although I didn't enjoy that, I want to do it again, and I want to repeatedly do it. And it's also interesting, I think, addiction, you've mentioned numerous times. I think I was listening to Dr. Carl Hart talk once, and he kind of pointed out, and it's a really simple fact that all medical people will probably think it's not even worth mentioning, but how addiction, you can't become addicted to something on the first time. Addiction is something that you have to repeatedly take something to form an addiction. Otherwise, it's not an addiction, if you know what I mean. So it was interesting on that you have a lot of drugs where it's that fear of you try it once and you're addicted. And that was a lot of the things to put people off weed or crack and things like that in the day. A lot of the media pressure or government pressure was a one token and you're an addict. And that apparently isn't the case. That's not a physical, or you're not a physical addict. Again, addiction, again, it's an interesting term because there's physical addiction and there's psychological addiction.
Yeah.
You can become addicted to Twitter. You know, there's things like that can become addictive. So, yeah, it's an odd
term. I think perhaps maybe in next series we should have a whole episode dedicated to addiction and trying to understand it, because it's quite poorly understood. It's very complicated and it's really important. So
yeah.
It's probably worth its own its own space.
Yeah, I love the idea of that.
So back to cannabis.
Yes.
As well as the sort of psychological intoxication effects that we've just discussed, there are also physiological changes that happen while you're intoxicated. So your heart rate increases. You get a dry mouth quite often. You get red eyes because actually the pressure of the fluid inside your eyeballs changes.
Oh, wow.
Your muscles can relax, which can make it sort of slightly feel effortful to get up off the sofa and go and get the snacks or whatever. But, so these effects probably aren't that nice, but there are also potential beneficial effects of cannabis to multiple sclerosis in particular.
Right.
And in fact, an extract of cannabis spray is now available on prescription in the UK and 26 other countries, this thing called Sativex, to ease the symptoms of multiple sclerosis.
Oh, wow. That's fascinating. And it's fascinating as well. The bit that surprised me of them was heart rate increasing, because, again, you think of cannabis as being a relaxant, but obviously it's a muscle relaxant, but not necessarily a physical relaxant in that sense. But I guess it also makes sense because of the talk of paranoia and things like that.
Yep.
So again,
and
if
anxiety.
Your heart rate's up, you kind of have that panic and anxiety. But yeah, it's fascinating and it's exciting. When one of the reasons that we discussed doing these podcasts when you were on my podcast was the fascinating thing, as you were saying there, of people from the medical background starting to look at drugs from an unbiased point of view and going, right, here's what it does. How can that help? Mm-hmm. And things like that, if you're talking about muscle relaxing and things like this, then it makes sense that it could help bronchial sclerosis and numerous other things. Yeah. So that's kind of exciting developments, right? Or exciting, at least, opening of the mind of going, right, let's see how we can use this in a positive way.
Yeah, absolutely. But these short-term effects that we've discussed might then lead on to sort of more longer-term effects. So things like increasing heart rate means that actually in the sort of hour or two after smoking cannabis, you're five times more likely to have a heart attack in that time period. But then that's similar to doing vigorous exercise.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of an effect. It's your five times increased risk, but the overall risk is pretty low.
So are you saying that you could skip the gym and just get stoned on the sofa and the heart rate will have a similar...
Well, it doesn't have the beneficial effects on any of the other things that exercise has beneficial effects on. It
just that's interesting.
Potential negative effect.
Yeah. And again, important as well to highlight the danger, but also the limitation of that danger. Because again, that surprised me to hear that there's a higher risk of heart attack, but then interesting to say that's similar to exercise or if you've had to rush for the train or and things like that. So
exactly, the quantification.
It's interesting to have that caution, but also to say, look, it's not necessarily, because that's the kind of thing, again, that it's a fact that the media could report and make a massive deal of, when it may or may not be a massive deal. And there are certain things that, again, are definitely clearly a massive deal. I'm not saying this is, or the point of these podcasts aren't pro or anti, they're just factual information.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting on that, that there's things that you could take out as a soundbite and say there's a higher risk of heart attack, but then you can quantify that a bit and at least say, well, there's higher risk of heart attack. You know, just to give another example, probably after sex.
That is actually
heart rate will be
the
up
other example
hugely,
that
and things like that. Yeah, and no one's saying that we should all stop having sex because it's dangerous to your heart.
Yeah.
But yeah,
but it's a potentially important piece of information for people who have pre-existing heart problems or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So quite often the risk of certain substances are increased in certain subgroups of people, and I think that's particularly important to think about for cannabis. And we'll come on to the sort of potential impact on mental health in a bit, because there are a few more physical health problems to talk about first.
Because that's great, because again, because people talk of cannabis being good as a prescription drug, essentially, as well, but people don't really know what thing is good to make it clearer what things it would benefit. Because again, you generally think of it being a relaxing thing. So you might think if someone has heart conditions, that cannabis would be a good thing because it will calm them down. And that's the complete opposite. Mm-hmm. And that's fascinating, because it's easy for people to get a tiny bit of information and self-medicate.
Yeah,
and go, right, well, my dad's getting older, his heart's not great. I've got another person whose dad who they sneak him a bit of weed and it really helps his particular condition or his particular thing. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that would be, but again, that's not the case. So that's interesting that heart conditions are one that It's kind of the opposite of what you'd think, that it'll chill you out, it'll help you, but no, it's...
But then a lot of this also might be due to the fact that most people, when they take cannabis, smoke it.
Right, yeah.
So smoking, and certainly in the UK, most people mix it with tobacco when they smoke it as well. So all of the health problems associated with smoking will be
added onto it
then. Yeah. And even if you're not mixing it with tobacco, you're still burning something and inhaling burnt leaf, which potentially contains sort of carcinogens and that sort of thing. There's much less research about the effect on the physical, on your physical self of smoking pure cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of research about the harms of smoking tobacco, which, again, another episode for that.
Again, it's wonderful, though, that a lot of the risks that people in the anti-cannabis lobby, or a lot of the stats on risk that they'd quote, would be down to the legal part that we put in. The bit, the drug that's legal in these joints that people are smoking is the bit that's potentially the most damaging or threatening in that way. So,
yeah. So I think that's pretty much covered the sort of long-term physical effects. Mm-hmm. And again, I think an important thing to say here is that just because there's no evidence of harm doesn't mean that there's no harm. It's because these studies haven't been done.
Yeah.
So it could perfectly well be that cannabis could cause all sorts of problems that we don't yet know about just because we haven't been able to do good quality research to find out. So this kind of thing is going on. And another potential big problem is that brains don't stay the same over time.
Yeah.
And certainly when you're a teenager, that's when there's a lot of development of your brain going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some circuitry in the brain called the endocannabinoids, cannabis receptors, basically, because you produce endocannabinoids. And this part of the brain is developing during the teenage years. So potentially cannabis smoking could be more harmful when you're younger than when you're an adult. And that brain development goes on until you're about 20 or 21. And again, the evidence here isn't strong, but it's certainly suggestive that this area of the brain is certainly developing. Cannabis affects this area of the brain.
Yeah.
So it's potential that...
So you think it'd have some kind of influence and an element on that. And again,
it's possible.
Yeah. And that's what's, again, interesting of the scientific approach rather than the pro or anti, is the fact is... science is almost waiting to be proven wrong or to find out what's right and what's wrong. The fact is, all you can go off is what you know so far, but, you know, you're always begging for more information, more that can be studied and more examples, right?
Well, what you do with science is you come up with an idea and then you try and prove yourself wrong by experiments. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of research going on into that at the moment. Now, cannabis and mental health.
Yes.
So this is what gets reported in the media a lot. Cannabis causes schizophrenia. Cannabis lowers your IQ. Cannabis increases your risk of other drug use.
Mm-hmm.
And there's certainly evidence that cannabis use over long periods of time can lead to demotivation. So this can really disrupt your work or your schoolwork if you feel like you only really enjoy yourself while you're smoking cannabis, and whenever you're not smoking it, you just don't feel like doing anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's not really the same as cannabis causing the lowering of your IQ.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing where if you were sort of able to use it less or use it in certain situations, it might not necessarily have these problems. It's sort of the pattern of use rather than the use in and of itself.
It's the pattern. Because that's interesting there, because it's the kind of... It's not saying that when you're on it, it's having these effects. It's when you're... You're not on it. And I always remember hearing on QI, I think it was, about coffee and how coffee is seen as a stimulant and gives you energy. And the fact is, it doesn't give you more energy than you had before you ever tried coffee.
Yeah. It's bringing but you out of withdrawal.
It's bringing you out of the withdrawal. So it's not actually this great thing. And I've never had coffee in my life. So I kind of... I never plan to now, because the fact is, if I have it, it's pulling me down a level that I'm then having to spend money or health issues to get back to. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting one. It's a hard one to attribute, because you can say that that's the fault of weed.
Yeah.
If someone is demotivated by not being as happy when they're not on it, but it's not actually a direct effect or cause of weed.
Yeah, it's the way.
It's a grey area. Yeah.
Using it. And in terms of psychosis, depression, and anxiety, there's consistent evidence from what we call observational epidemiological studies, mm-hmm. that there's associations between cannabis use and later mental health problems.
Right.
However, the problem with these kind of research, and this is the type of research that I do, so I think it has benefits, but it's also really important to think about the limitations. And that's that you have to just watch what people choose to do.
Yeah.
And the people who choose to use cannabis are going to be different from the people who choose not to use cannabis in loads of ways other than just their cannabis use.
Yeah.
And it's trying to account for all of those differences in all the studies that you run is really, really difficult.
Right. Yeah, completely. So, it's not a simple thing to say which we're testing on this person and their mental health has gone from here to here. But all you're taking into account is their cannabis use. You're mm-hmm. not taking into account the other ups and downs of their lives, their other uses, their other things like that. So yeah, it's a vague one where I guess it's the whole causation or correlation argument of right, is this affecting it or is this just a symptom of that lifestyle, of that social situation?
Is there something happening earlier in life that's affecting both drug use and mental health?
Yeah, or exactly. I think that was one of the things that we discussed when you were on the podcast. The fact it's fascinating that it could be something else that has caused the drug use and the mental health issue, whereas all we're gauging from is when the drug use started and seeing from there what the effect was. Well, whereas that may have been cogs already in motion. Do you know what I mean? That regardless of if they'd engaged in cannabis use, if it had gone either way.
Or it could be perfectly possible that the cannabis use does increase the risk slightly, but it's only in conjunction with all of the other risk factors in that person's life that sort of pile up and eventually tip them over the edge. And so mm-hmm. the cannabis use is one tiny part in a big picture of risk for mental health problems.
But again, an easy part to latch onto and use as an example of this is evil because mm-hmm. look at this. Yeah.
And in terms of interventions, it's easier to stop someone use it or tell someone not to use cannabis than it is to completely change society so that people don't grow up in poverty and that kind of thing.
So
it's not necessarily what I would pick as the most important thing to change, but it's certainly easier to target.
It's an attackable part of the problem, isn't it, I guess, mm-hmm.
Right, so what I was thinking now is that we could move on to talking about myths yes. around cannabis.
Yes, there's a lot.
There are a lot. So cannabis is a gateway drug.
Right.
That's something you hear a lot, that people use cannabis and then if they use cannabis, they're more likely to then go on to use harder drugs like cocaine or even heroin. And so if you can stop the cannabis, you'd stop all of that mm-hmm. sort of cascade.
I mean, it's an interesting one because it kind of gives cannabis the warm hug of being the more acceptable of the drugs, if you know what I mean, because that has always been the way. It's like, well, yeah, but it will lead to this. So in a way, it's in many ways that statement is saying that cannabis isn't that bad, but it will lead to this, which is a really odd backhanded compliment in a way. It's like the actual effects of cannabis are fine, but it's what it could lead to that's the problem. But again, is that
Well, there's certainly theoretical reasons why it might be the case, but they're not because of cannabis itself. It's because of cannabis's legal status.
Yeah.
So you have to become a criminal to use cannabis because it's illegal. And so you have to go and buy your cannabis off someone who is a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And that person who you're buying your cannabis off is probably not just selling cannabis.
Yeah, sure.
So that's the way you become exposed to these more... cocaine and certainly heroin is definitely more harmful.
Yeah.
That's not to say that cannabis isn't harmful. Generally, there aren't really any drugs that aren't harmful, but you have to kind of weigh up the harms and make decisions.
Yeah, sure.
And some drugs are going to be more harmful than others. And if that's the way that you come across these drugs is by going to these people who are selling them, then they're going to want to sell you more drugs. They're potentially going to want to get you hooked on a drug that's more addictive.
Yep, yep.
So that is a perfectly reasonable route by which cannabis could be a gateway drug.
But it's
really easily solvable by separating the cannabis from the other drugs.
I was going to say, it's kind of fascinating that the argument of cannabis being a gateway drug is actually one of the strongest arguments for the legalisation of cannabis, surely. Because if you're saying that it's a gateway drug, but not through any technical or scientific levels, purely through situational, if you then removed it from that situation, therefore anyone using cannabis wasn't having to go to their street dealer or whoever else, then it stops it being a gateway drug.
Well, and you can look to the Netherlands to see, again, this isn't, you can't infer causation from this, but they moved cannabis use into coffee shops away from dealers on the street, and they have one of the lowest rates of heroin use in Europe. Could be a coincidence. Could not be a coincidence.
Yeah, yeah.
But certainly very interesting.
It's fascinating, yeah, because again, it's changing the atmosphere and location of the use of these drugs, and it's not. Yeah, it's a really interesting one because it's chosen the putting of cannabis into coffee shops. I don't know how planned and thought out that action is, but I think it's a really fascinating one because it's made that a drug you don't associate with clubs or with. We have all these other things, and I guess it was never that kind of drug. But it's, I don't know, it's interesting where it was then removed from and taken into this world of it's one for more a chilled out evening and a relaxing evening rather than let's get off our face and go mental kind of thing. You know, it's a strange area.
All right, next myth.
Yes,
cannabis is natural, therefore it's harmless.
Mm-hmm.
I mean. This is obviously ridiculous. There are so many natural things that are harmful that it's a bit absurd anyway. But
again, that is always one that I love. People are like, well, you know, it's natural. It's growing on the ground. How can it be bad? It's like, well, there's tons of mushrooms that are poisonous and all sorts of stuff that can kill you. And there's loads of stuff that isn't natural that's hugely beneficial to you and to us in medication and all sorts of other things. Mm-hmm. So.
But yeah, cannabis does lead to dependence in about 10% of people who use it.
Yeah,
and
that's an interestingly a low amount, though.
Yeah,
again, that's
it
kind
seems
of
like it might be something else at play, perhaps genetic susceptibility to cannabis dependence. There is a physical withdrawal for people who are dependent on it: decreased appetite, decreased weight, mood problems, and insomnia. So it's not just a psychological addiction as well.
That's interesting.
So harmless it is not.
Right.
Okay, myth number three. Holding the smoke in your lungs increases the amount of THC, one of the active ingredients that you absorb. It's not true, or certainly the experiments that have been done so far don't suggest that that's true. What's actually happening is that you're holding your breath, so you're starving your brain of oxygen and you get a head rush.
Yeah.
But obviously,
it's stoner science, right? It's like, well, here's definitely, this will make all the difference where it's not actually backed
up. But holding the smoke in your lungs is really bad in terms of carcinogens getting into your lungs. The longer you hold the smoke in your lungs, the more harm it's likely to do to your lungs.
Yeah.
So this is a really, really bad idea, basically.
So effectively, you could get the same perceived effect by smoking a bit and then after that just holding your breath because it's a head rush. All you're getting there is a head rush, and at least you're not then getting the increased negative effect of the carcinogens. So that's a fascinating one again, because it's weird, because it's things like that that as again, I'm not using stoner as a derogatory term, because there was points at college I would 100% be described as a stoner, but it's that stoner logic of I've done this, I'm feeling an effect immediately, therefore everything's at play, rather than the fact that if you're stoned and you hold your breath, you're going to have that same effect regardless. You're going to get a head rush and you're going to be more aware of it and so on.
I want to run this experiment now. I wonder if anyone will fund me to run that.
Yeah. Just
probably not.
The benefits or effects of holding your breath on different kinds of drugs. see what difference it makes. That's fascinating.
Okay, and final myth. Cannabis will cure cancer, but Big Pharma don't want us to know this because they can't market cannabis.
Again, huge conspiracy theory in those respects, and often the way of things being tied in that people who are into conspiracy theories often tend to be into weed or something like that. So it always interests me when conspiracy theories come up that kind of relate or justify stuff that they're into as a reason. It's like that's a really convenient conspiracy theory there that's come up. So yeah, is that?
Well, there are sort of half truths and little bits of potential interesting information here. Yeah. There have been trials to try and use cannabis to prevent sort of nausea associated with treatment for cancer.
Yep, with chemo and stuff
absolutely.
Like that. With chemotherapy.
But so far, it hasn't really been seen to be that beneficial.
Yeah.
But it does seem to stop nausea, so that was a potential for treatment.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But the idea that cannabis can't be marketed and therefore Big Pharma are trying to sort of suppress it is just ridiculous, because now there is Sativex that is being marketed. It's a medicine. Yeah. So it's just patently not true.
Yeah.
And I won't go into too much more detail now, but what I'll do is I'll link to a great blog on the Cancer Research UK website that's right. updated all the time. I think it was last updated 6 months ago or so, yeah. About all of the evidence so far about whether cannabis can cure cancer. And yeah. so far, there's just no good evidence, certainly not in humans.
Right.
But it's not that people aren't looking. Yeah. This research is being done. And if there is some way that it could be beneficial, like, it will be found because people are looking.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be found out. That's interesting. And again, the interesting thing you said there is that there's small bits that suggest there might be something there, and that's the key to every conspiracy theory, that tiny bit of information yeah. that you can then, again, on both sides, on attacking a drug and on being pro a drug, is that tiny bit of information that you can put your whole house on and say, well, it is a fact that it does this, therefore...
Extrapolate.
Huge, yeah, yeah, huge exaggerations on what that therefore then proves. And that's on the as said, on the anti and on the yeah. on any pro drug side. So it's good to kind of have that there. That it's like, no, despite what you've read,
yeah.
that doesn't mean that it's this magic cure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so now what we still don't know about cannabis, mm-hmm. and there's quite a bit here and something really quite important. And this is that there's lots of different active ingredients in cannabis.
Right.
So the one that people really hear about most is probably THC.
Yeah.
And THC is the ingredient that induces sort of psychotic-like experiences while you're intoxicated. So mm-hmm. the things like the paranoia and the anxiety. And this has actually been tested in randomized controlled trials. It really does induce transient psychotic experiences.
Right.
And there's some evidence that THC levels in cannabis have been rising over the past 50 years.
Okay.
But there are loads and loads and loads of other ingredients in cannabis as well. And potentially the different levels of them could make the drug have a really different effect on a person.
Right, yeah.
So another one that's been a bit more researched is one called cannabidiol, also known as CBD. Mm-hmm. And CBD seems to have dropped in... certainly the ratio between THC and CBD seems to have changed over the past sort of 10 to 15, right. potentially even longer years. And there have been some pilot studies that have suggested that CBD might be antipsychotic.
Right.
So you can see why this could potentially be a problem if yeah. THC levels are on the rise and CBD levels are on the fall. And researchers have tried to look at this, and they tend to use skunk as shorthand for high THC, low CBD, and hash as shorthand for one with a sort of pretty equal ratio of THC right, yeah. and CBD. And I've been told by cannabis users that actually it is perfectly possible to get skunk with higher CBD or yeah. hash with really high levels of THC. But this is the shorthand that's used because that's more common in terms of research. So if I do refer to skunk and hash, I'm sort of using them in that kind of
in those terms.
Shorthand.
And that's interesting. Because again, in my days, if it's skunk, was just the stronger, more, you know, more potent, more. So it's interesting to know what it's yeah. stronger in and more potent in, kind of specifically, I guess.
Yeah. And there are researchers now who are really worried about this and think that perhaps the research that's been done to date has been done on people who were smoking cannabis, or the data was collected sort of 10 to 15 to 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So actually the cannabis that they were using then is probably really quite different to the cannabis being used now. And potentially that means it's really difficult to know whether these effects that we're seeing in these research still hold true today, or whether yeah. actually they're completely different. So it's another potential problem, though, that regulation might be able to solve. If you could then... choose what you wanted to smoke because you could see, well, this has got this percentage of THC and this percentage of CBD and yeah. potentially other substances as well.
And it's something that could be, that we could quite quickly get quite a clear understanding on. Again, this similar to how alcohol has its percentages on the side, has its strength. You kind mm-hmm. of know, all right, I want that kind of night, or I want this kind of night, kind of thing. Do you know, that's kind of in there. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's interesting there on the regulation side how much more control people could have, because you're not getting any breakdowns on the side of clear bag of weed or whatever else that you're getting from your dealer. There's just, here's some stuff. It's really good or it's really strong.
This is what's available.
Yeah, and again, there'll be loose bits of information floating around, like this is a really happy high or this is a heavier high and things like that. But that's so vague and so inspecific that you're being told, oh, it's a happy, oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that,
it's
is
happy
it
for you, but
medically
not
a happy high?
Happy
yeah, exactly.
Me,
yeah, it's the different effects.
Mm. And finally, we still don't really know who, if anyone, is at particular risk to their mental health from using cannabis. But I think this is something that we'll be able to find more and more about as research goes on. So genetic information, for example, there is some suggestion that cannabis use is at least partly heritable, meaning there might be some kind of genetic predisposition to using cannabis.
Right.
And studies that are trying to look across the whole of the human genome to find what there's very unlikely to be a specific gene that predicts cannabis use.
Yeah.
But it might be a combination of lots of different genes all having a very small effect. And in fact, there's a study that's just been published that has found no significant hits for this, but quite a lot of sort of interesting looking associations suggesting that there is a lot of different areas in the genome that all have a tiny, tiny impact on increasing your risk. And obviously it's not the only thing as well. Your genes won't determine it, but they might play a part. So if you could look at people and say, well, your parents had problems with cannabis, so it's probably not worth you doing it. Or your parents had problems with mental health, so cannabis might be a risk factor for you where it wouldn't be for someone else. Or you had a lot of difficulties during your childhood, so you might be a bit more vulnerable. You might find it just slightly harder to cope.
Yeah.
Again, we don't know how to identify these people yet. But if we could, it might be really, really helpful to actually target interventions at these people who really are at quite high risk from cannabis use, whereas other people might be at a very, very low risk.
Yeah, it is a fascinating one because it just highlights even more how it's all individual experience and reaction and can be completely different for different people. Mm-hmm. So, again, I know people who are at their most creative on cannabis. I know people who are at their least creative on cannabis. So even from those levels of direct effect, it's different. But again, it's similar to alcohol and similar to all these other things that it's such a casual thing to say, he's a terrible drunk, he's an angry drunk, or he's a friendly drunk and things like that. So, and that's something that's just acceptable and part of our society. So it's not necessarily a bad thing or a demonising thing to say that we don't really know what causes the different effects, if you know what I mean, or who's susceptible to what, because that's kind of an acceptable thing in everything that we have. Some people can eat pizza all their lives and remain skinny, and some can't. We react to different things in different ways, I guess.
Yeah, and also people are trying to work out whether there might be any other benefits from cannabis. Yeah. So we've mentioned multiple sclerosis, but anecdotally, people with arthritis sometimes report that cannabis helps. There's even been some suggestion that maybe it could be a treatment for anorexia. It does boost appetite, so potentially that could be a use
that's
as well.
Fascinating, yeah.
And this kind of research is ongoing at the moment.
I mean, that's really good. And is it a recent thing that there's kind of more openness to this kind of research for those reasons? Because it is one, I was going to say, all the positive stories I hear of cannabis helping all different kinds of things all tend to be anecdotal. I don't really hear that much of it's medically proven that it's good for arthritis or good for this. You'll hear loads of, oh, my granddad, it really sorted him out and helped him out. It's like, that's as bad as the other way of anecdotal evidence of someone going crazy when they had one joint and they went off the rails kind of thing. So you've got to have that balance on either side. So it's interesting that there's ongoing studies now to try and find out more.
Watch this space, and hopefully we'll be able to report back when studies are done.
Perfect.
So there you have it. And one thing I wanted to mention before we finish up is that actually cannabis did used to be used in a medical context back in the Victorian times. Tincture of cannabis, which is cannabis dissolved in alcohol, used to be prescribed for pain problems. And as we mentioned, cannabis is addictive and it can be difficult to quit. And if you're struggling and you're looking for help, I've included some links here to things that might be useful for you. I hope you enjoyed that podcast. If you've got any questions or you've got any comments, I'm on Twitter @Sousaphone. And if you enjoyed the podcast, I hope you'll subscribe, and I hope you'll join us in a couple of weeks. And the next substance we'll be talking about is going to be tobacco. You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music was by Jim Murray. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council, and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.